Luke 15:1-24. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them. So he told them this parable. Which one of you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, does not have the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost." Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost." Just so I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country. And there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands." So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found."
Finding Nemo has got to be one of the saddest Disney movies, right up there with Dumbo and Bambi. The first time I watched it, I bawled. I mean, like, really bawled. Ugly cry, kind of cry. Within the first few moments of the film, Nemo's mother and potential siblings all die in a barracuda attack. The film begins with Nemo's dad, Marlin, hovering over the single egg left, cherishing it with all his being, promising he will always take care of it. We're instantly taken to Nemo's first day of school and Marlin's hesitancy in letting him go. Initially, it seems like he's being irrationally overprotective. He's hovered over his son his whole life, and now when Nemo finally gets the chance to break away from his father's leash, his father nervously holds on tighter. Here they are that first day of school. Marlin's explaining to this Ray that he's sure he's a very good teacher and will keep his children safe, but in reality, what's going to happen? What kind of safety precautions does he have in place should there be some sort of attack? Meanwhile, Nemo sees this boat and decides to step off the reef, something his father has told him time and time again not to do. He begins to swim towards the boat as his father is shouting, "Don't touch that boat. Get back here right now." You can see him shouting and screaming. And Nemo defies his father with everyone watching and touches the boat. He begins to come back, and as you'll see, something awful happens. A scuba diver spots Nemo, the perfect little clownfish that would look great in his office, captures him, and takes him away. Marlin screams for fear, tries to save his son, and yet is incapable of doing so while Nemo's taken away and his father seeks to go after him. So, you go from laughing, because who hasn't been or had a defiant kid in their lives? I want you to go home and watch that show, by the way. Then you can see it with actual sound, without our technological problems. But Marlin is angry at his son. He's angry because he's so scared. He spent his entire life trying to keep his son from harm. And sure, maybe he was overprotective, but in this moment, we see why. The laughter fades quickly to terrifying fear and overwhelming sadness. This guts me. I know it's a cartoon, and if you'd heard it with sound, it probably would gut you a little bit more too. But in this moment, all I can see is Molly. And at first I'm angry, and I'm instantly terrified, all in a matter of seconds. At two, you better believe that I have seen defiance. My child would do the same thing. Just to prove to me she's independent, she'd run away just like that. And I can see myself yelling at her, "Come back here right now, young lady." And then the fear. I can't even take it. Just thinking about it. What a way to start a movie. I know it's called Finding Nemo, so in order to find Nemo, he has to get lost first. But man, first they start with the death of the mother. It's always the mom, right? Every Disney film. And all those potential eggs that could have made for a huge family, and that personally hits home with me. So you're already in tears. Then they move right into this. I want to just turn it off right after the scene. I just want to be done with it, walk away, not here anymore. But knowing that the arc of a storyline has to start with a problem, move into an adventure of some sort, and eventually come to resolution, I forced myself to keep watching. But man, they really cut deep. Disney knows how to tell a story. There's a caveat here, one that I was basically oblivious to, because while yes, this is a Disney film, it's a bit complicated, because actually, it's a Pixar film. Until I researched for this sermon, I didn't really understand the complexities of the relationship between Disney and Pixar. Elena knew, was trying to explain it to me. But this is what happened. Until 2006, when Pixar was purchased as a subsidiary of the Disney company, it was actually its own company. And it still remains its own studio to this day, even though they're all now part of the larger Disney umbrella. So at the time, Disney contracted with Pixar to make Finding Nemo back in 2003 when it came out. Now, Disney got a ton of rights and was in charge of marketing and all sorts of other things, but Pixar actually created the film. So I guess what I mean to say is that those guys at Pixar really know how to tell a story. And it's a good story, because it's so real. I mean, by real, I don't mean that clownfish send their kids to school with bat rays, or that it's actually possible to ride the EAC, the Eastern Atlantic Current, with turtles, or that a whale is likely to swallow up a couple fish and then blast them out of its bullhole. But the reason it touches us is because we can see ourselves in the characters. And if we look close enough, we can see God too. Jesus did something revolutionary. Well, many things revolutionary during his lifetime. But one of the things he did was dramatically change our understanding of our relationship with God. Not just in the idea of God incarnate in Jesus, but God as a parent. Jesus introduced God as not only his father, but our father as well. And you know, the word he used wasn't the formal word pater in Greek, father in English. It was the much more familiar word Abba in Aramaic. It's left untranslated in Greek and even in our English translations, though the best English translation we can come up with for Abba is daddy. So Jesus tells us God is like our daddy. And I definitely think that we see this in this movie. Marlon's like God, or rather, God is like Marlon. Because Marlon himself is certainly not all-powerful. He's a small little clownfish who's best at darting in for safety rather than bravely striking out into the unknown. He's actually a bit of a coward, though his life experiences have certainly led him to be timid and overly cautious. In so many ways, he's entirely unlike our image of God. Except there's one important way. Marlon is most definitely a daddy. He might seem strict and unforgiving, but the truth is, Marlon is nothing but love. What Nemo did was wrong. He should have listened to his father. He should have stayed on the reef. Instead, he wanted to show his father he could do whatever he wanted. He willingly defied him. It was a direct challenge to his father and his father's rules. The thing about the rules that his father had set up were that they weren't rules just for rules' sake or to show Marlon's dominance over Nemo, simply to keep Nemo in his place, always submissive to his father. No, they were there to protect Nemo, to keep him safe, free from harm. This was always Marlon's first and foremost priority. He might have been a bit overprotective, but it was out of love. And yet Nemo rebelled and did what any of us would have likely done at some stage in our lives, maybe even this stage, broken the rule to exert our independence. You might say Nemo sinned, and it was a pretty big one because it changed the course of events for both of their lives. In fact, it nearly cost them their lives. It was a dumb move done out of ignorance and defiance. Of course, we've never done anything out of ignorance or defiance. Of course, we have. Hopefully, we do it less and less as we grow and mature. But if the news is any indication of our state of affairs, it doesn't matter how old we are or how few rules are imposed upon us. We need look no further than the top position in our country to see ignorance and defiance at work. All of us are petulant children sometimes, though some of us more than others. We make decisions that are bad for ourselves and hurtful to others. We don't think ahead about the consequences of our actions. We do stupid stuff. We say stupid stuff. And we hurt people. I'm going to brush some broad strokes here. So let's be clear that we probably can't apply this to all of the Hebrew scriptures. But pre-Jesus, we had a different dynamic set up in the relationship between God and humanity. Over and over again, humanity pulled a Nemo. We thought we could go it alone. We didn't need to follow the rules or think about our consequences. We could do what we wanted. And inevitably, we screwed up. That usually invoked a response from God that wasn't so pleasant. It usually went something like this. God said, "You are my people, do this." And the people did for a little while, but they got selfish and they did their own thing. God warned them to repent, but they didn't. So God punished them by destroying them and their successive generations. It was tough love at its toughest. But then Jesus comes along and tells us that God is our daddy, and that's how we should address God. Now, let me just parenthetically note, as I often do, that what Jesus is doing here is not saying God is a man or that God is our father and not our mother. Jesus is doing something revolutionary by changing our understanding of the nature of God, telling us that God is as close to us as a daddy, is as loving and gentle and forgiving as a daddy. Not telling us that from here on out to eternity, God will forever be a big man. Rather, Jesus is making a dramatic statement that God is like marlin. Therefore, in redefining our understanding of God, our relationship with God, we also begin to understand God's actions in different ways. No longer is God easily angered or filled with retribution, destroying nations and casting curses upon generation after generation. That's not what a daddy does. It's not to say that God doesn't get angry, because I kind of bet God does. I bet God is filled with disappointment, often heartbroken by all of our defiant actions that hurt ourselves and one another. I think if we listened closely, we'd hear God shouting out to us, like Marlin does to Nemo, "Stop! Get back here right now! Don't you touch that boat! Don't you say those words! Don't you exploit those people! Don't you build those weapons! Don't you dare touch that button!" God help us. That's just what God's doing, trying to help us. But we get so caught up in ourselves, wrapped up in our own desires, intent on being independent, not pulled back by anyone. We make foolish mistakes. We sin. But there's good news. Jesus reminds us that when we are lost, God will find us. In the Gospel of Luke, Jesus gives us 3 lost and found stories: the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. We know that last one as the prodigal son, the modern name we've given to it. But in all of these parables, Jesus conveys that God is one who searches out the lost, does not rest until it is found, and rejoices upon its return. Whether it's one sheep that is lost from the 99, or the coin found by a woman who had lost it, or the son who had left home, squandered his life, when the lost was found, there was rejoicing. In none of these parables is there punishment. The shepherd doesn't beat the sheep for getting lost from the 99. No, instead, the shepherd demonstrates how valuable that one sheep is and goes out in search of it, lays it on its shoulders, comforting it when it's been found. The woman with the coin, she doesn't give up on it. She scours her home until she finds it. And then when she does, she throws a big party, probably spending more than what she found, but rejoicing all the same. And then there's the story we're most familiar with, though we never call it by its lost name, despite its obvious placement in the sequence of lost parables. We call it the prodigal son because that's what we think he was: wasteful and irresponsible. And if we're honest, we blame that son. Those of us who identify with the hardworking son who remained home are bitter about the party the father throws. All the gifts he lavishes upon the newly returned son, we kind of think he deserves to lay with the pigs and eat slop. But get this, God doesn't. In Jesus' parable, the father runs to the son and with amazing grace welcomes him home, rejoices at his return, lavishes him with a robe and a ring, and throws a big old party. And Marlin, his anger fades instantly. He's not mad at his son. He only wants to find him. He braves his own fears. Not only does he travel beyond the reef, he travels the entire ocean in an unbelievable journey with the strangest of companions, the least of whom is Dory, who ends up having her own adventure in a movie recently released. Marlin risks his life over and over again to find his son. Such is his great love, deeper than the ocean, wider still. Imagine the joy in their reunion. Any of us parents can imagine it as if we ourselves were reunited with our own children. Jesus tells us that there will be much joy in heaven, rejoicing amongst all the angels when we who have sinned have repented. That is, when we who have been lost are found. We're gonna screw up. It's human nature. But Jesus reminds us there's always good news. God's amazing grace will forgive us, seek us out, hold us close, and celebrate when we're found. animate your faith. Amen.